I'm going to, there's a very interesting history, one that's been very hard to uncover, in terms of the way handicapped people were treated during religious times. And as you'll see, the history of religious views and feelings of religious people during history has swung like a pendulum, sometimes being very cruel, sometimes being very humane. As you will see, as I will note for you in here, the Christian era ushered in the time where treatment of the handicapped person was becoming much more humane. It signaled the start of humanity. You'll also note, and I've got an interesting quotation in here from Martin Luther, that not all of the feelings toward handicap were necessarily humanistic, or at least clearly understood. So I've got about a page, about two pages, that's a very concise, interesting overview that I'd like to present to you. And then after that, I would like to talk about contemporary history, about the way that churches in particular are helping handicapped people these days. And I will ask you to contribute to that because I know several of you have, or I think several of you have had some experience in your own churches with handicapped people. Let's begin back in 1552 with the Greeks and with the Romans in 449 B.C. Back in those days, there are recorded references to the condition of mental retardation. Both the Greeks and the Romans spoke of fools and monsters and alluded to their inability to provide for self or family. With the ancient writers, Plato, Aristotle, and Celsus, all concerned with the philosophic nature of man and his relationship to the world, it is not surprising that some of their attention would go to persons who significantly deviated in appearance or behavior. Both the Athenian and Spartan city-states are reported to have dealt severely with mental defects because their interest was in developing a society free of defectives. And of course, several hundred years later, the Germans went along the same track. The mentally retarded were thought of as essentially non-human and were treated accordingly. The laws of Lycurgus called for the deliberate abandonment of idiots and fools, and as a result, such persons were thrown off mountains, drowned in rivers, or simply left to the elements to die. They were considered creatures incapable of human feelings and therefore undeserving of human compassion. Extermination was the rule of the day. In Rome, it was customary for the elite to keep fools and jesters for the amusement of the household and its guests. One author reports that many owners acquired greatness and fame as a result of their possessions of fools. Unfortunately, all mentally retarded and deformed persons did not fare as well. Chains, cages, or sentences of death were the fate of many, while others were left alone to roam and care for themselves, Rome being R-O-A-M in this case, and eventually to perish. Two authors report that in the Middle Ages, when many small individual kingdoms in Europe were being developed, the mentally defective's treatment changed from extermination to ridicule, which is almost as bad, obviously. Kings and lords kept the defective individuals for objects of play and display. Concurrently, there existed a trend toward care on the part of the noble and wealthy. One author emphasizes the importance of this movement in Belgium at the village of Giel. During this time, many idiots migrated to Giel in hopes of being cured. Now, we don't know what they mean by idiots. These could have been epileptics. As we know, if you were here a few weeks ago, or if you've heard of the community of Bethel in Germany, that was started for epileptic persons, and this could have been also for epileptics. At one time, as you probably know, or you may not, all epileptics were thought to be mentally retarded. And it was very common in the days when institutions were beginning in this country to institutionalize all epileptics. As a matter of fact, the institution that I used to work at in Wisconsin, which was begun in 1866, I believe, was originally called the State Home for the Feeble-Minded and the Epileptic. And now we know that many epileptics are not mentally retarded. Some are very bright. And so it's not a practice anymore to institutionalize epileptics just because they happen to be epileptic. But, yeah.
Yeah, when I was in college, in our abnormal psychology, we visited Spadra in California, and there they had the epileptics with these children that were vegetables, and they were just in cots. They couldn't feed themselves to do anything. I thought this was horrible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because the epileptics, well, we don't... But to have these others with them in the same institution, I thought was bad. I don't believe they still have it.
Probably not. And one of the reasons why epilepsy is still feared greatly among the public in this country is because it carries that stigma of mental retardation with it that it had in the past. By the way, the term feeble-minded, even though it's used in the book historically, is a bad word. It's not used any longer in this country, or shouldn't be. The term we prefer in this country is mental retardation, sometimes mental deficiency. But the English still use the term feeble-minded, not as a derogatory term, but as an official term. Anyway, I had talked about the immigration of mentally retarded persons who may have been epileptic to the community of Geel in Belgium. When no miracles occurred, because they thought that by having them together that miracles would occur, and the town became overpopulated with idiots, many of the richer residents took these wanderers into their homes. They were given special treatment based on the belief that they might have some connection with God or the unknown, and also to fulfill a work or labor need of their parent household. Now you begin to see kind of a crossroads in history. People using the retarded to their own advantage because they believe they might gain some deity power, some power from God by doing so, but in the process exploiting them. On the other hand, a movement coinciding with that where mentally retarded people were valued as individuals who needed help and so were taken in. So you can use the word taken in two ways. They were taken in and they were taken in. Okay? You can kind of think of it that way if you want to. This is kind of a crossroads in history. Taking defectives under care during this period of history is amply illustrated by Tycho Brahe, the great astronomer. He is said to have kept a mentally retarded male as a close companion in hopes that the mutterings of the defective would give him a, quote, divine revelation, end quote. Christianity provided the first real hope for these less fortunate members of society. The teachings of Christ, with their compassion for the unfortunate and handicapped, resulted in isolated instances when society recognized its responsibility. One author reports that Christian institutes such as Justinian and nunneries such as Byzantine provided caretakers for imbeciles and idiots. As early as the 4th century AD, St. Nicholas, and I can't pronounce his last name, although I don't imagine many of us remember St. Nicholas for anything but his first name anyway, Santa Claus. Anyway, his last name is Thaumaturgus, who was called the wonder worker and bishop of Myra, is said to have urged giving care and protection to the feeble-minded. Just as an aside, St. Nicholas was, I guess still is, the patron saint not only of the handicapped, But also you might be interested to know he's the patron saint of all children, sailors, and pawnbrokers. Kind of a, yeah, that's something you really had to learn this morning, but anyway, it's kind of fun to know some of these things. We know him, of course, for Santa Claus. From the 13th century, churches of Europe, mainly Roman Catholic, began to provide asylums for the mentally handicapped. The most famous was the Bicêtre of Paris, established by St. Vincent de Paul and his Sisters of Charity. And of course, we still have St. Vincent de Paul spread all over this country, agencies which help rehabilitate furniture and at the same time rehabilitate people. These monasteries or asylums were not designed for treatment or education, but were intended to provide sanctuary and separation from society. The Protestant Reformation brought with it still another view concerning the mentally ill and retarded. Both were thought to be possessed with a devil and filled with Satan. The strange behavior some retarded individuals displayed, for example, convulsions or seizures, was interpreted with religious overtones. As a result, many were tortured, tormented, and punished in an attempt to exorcise the demons within. Both Luther and Calvin regarded the retarded as godless, and a quote from Luther's own writing reflects the prevailing demonism theory of the time. And this is a quote from Luther. 8 years ago, there was one at Dessau whom I, Martinus Luther, saw and grappled with. By the way, this is from one of Luther's table talks. He was 12 years old, had the use of his eyes and all his senses, so that one might think that he was a normal child. But he did nothing but gorge himself as much as four peasants or thrashers. He ate, defecated, and drooled, and if anyone tackled him, he screamed. If things didn't go well, he wept. So I said to the Prince of Anhalt, if I were the prince, I should take this child to the Moldau River, which flows near Dessau, and drown him. But the Prince of Anhalt and the Prince of Saxony, who happened to be present, refused to follow my advice. Thereupon I said, well, then the Christian shall order the Lord's Prayer to be said in church and pray that the dear Lord take the devil away. This was done daily in Dessau, and the changeling died in the following year. When questioned about his recommendation, Luther indicated that such individuals were without a soul and that the devil was in the place where their soul should have been, end quote. Kind of an interesting piece of history. I didn't read this when Bainton was here. I don't think he would have minded anyway. He liked Luther not only for what he did for the church, but also for his humanness. Obviously, at least in my opinion, Luther has made an error in judgment here, but then we all do that. But it's an interesting quote and part of our heritage, at least part of my heritage, being interested in this field. Well, I want to now talk just a little bit and open it up to you regarding contemporary history, because sometimes we think of history as behind us, but there are exciting things happening now for handicapped individuals at this present time in history. And I have an individual sitting with me who doesn't know that I'm going to call on him, and I'd like him to tell you, if he won't mind, I hope he doesn't mind my putting him on the spot, about some history that he was involved with, not entirely with people handicapped by physical impairments, but handicapped by oppression. It's my friend Andy here who has done something that makes me very proud to even think about. And if he wouldn't mind, I'd like him to talk about that for a few minutes. Would you?
Okay. In 1971, my nephew and I decided to go to Europe. And we had been sending these care packages to some families in Poland. So I wanted to go and see the people who I was sending these gifts to. So John, my nephew, wanted to take 13 Bibles along and give them to some of his friends throughout Poland and Czechoslovakia and Hungary. So we flew to Amsterdam, picked up our Volkswagen camper. Then we go to Brother Franz's house. He gave us 24 Hungarian Bibles to bring along to Hungary, where this pastor was supposed to give them out to the people there. In the meantime, we made the trip through East Germany to Poland. John got rid of most of his Bibles there. But going through the line, we had our visas. They found the Bibles. We wouldn't hide them because there was one party that had a Volkswagen, just a small car, and when they asked him if he had any Bibles, he said no. They were suspicious, so they began to examine the car, and they discovered that he had taken out everything, filled where the lining was in his car with Bibles. They took his car, all his possessions, his Bibles, put him in prison for 6 months, and he was lucky to get out of there without losing his life. So don't pay to tell a lie. So when we came to the line in East Germany, they found the Bibles, and when they asked John, whose Bibles are they, he said, they are mine. They didn't see the Hungarian Bibles because they were in the suitcase, but the others were in underneath this cushion where they were in plain sight as soon as they looked at the top of the cover. He became very excited, but then he asked my nephew, are you a minister? No, John said, I'm a letter carrier or a mailman. So he stood there for a while, and then he told us to go on. So we went to the next one, was the Polish guard. He asked practically the same questions, but he let us go. As long as the Bibles belonged to us, they didn't say anything. When we came to the line at Hungary, the guard asked my nephew to open the one side of the suitcase. So John opened it, and there was his sweaters. The guard says, okay, you can go. If he had opened the other, he had told him to open the other side, there was 20 Bibles for the Hungarian people. So you see, to be honest, I wouldn't let John hide any of the Bibles because that was the only way we could carry those, was in the suitcase. They didn't ask us to open them. You do just what they ask you to do. And we traveled for a week with Pastor Doom, who was the founder of Toronto Christian Missions, and we visited with several of the people that we were sending care packages to, and also we had a chance to testify to them. These people were so happy to have us come. They got out of their beds and gave us their beds to sleep in. We didn't stay in any hotels. We stayed right in the homes of the people there. It proves to all of us that if we are honest, we should never be ashamed to do something for the Lord. He'll take care of us.
Thanks, Andy. Andy doesn't like to talk about those things, but I had prayed that he wouldn't mind my taking advantage of his presence this morning, because I think that's a beautiful piece of contemporary history, and also illustrates the fact that the worst kind of handicap is to be without God's Word, and Andy was seeing to that. Barbara, what's the name of the book that describes the kind of thing that Andy was engaged in?
God's Children.
My Brother Andrew.
That's a very powerful book. I haven't read all of it myself. Barbara has, but it's a very powerful book. Do you want to say anything about that, or Barbara?
Well, maybe Barbara can, because she's read it recently.
Well, it tells very similar experiences to Andy. The presence of God was, Paul, that these people could get the Bible in the place of it. Supposedly were inaccessible. It's just beautiful. It's very exciting. It's a fun book to read.
I think we have it in our library here.
I think it's on the exchange shelf right here.
Okay. There's also a man by the name of Brother Franz that brings Bibles and Christian literature into the. He's from Amsterdam. He comes over. He's been to several places here in the United States getting help to. Because it costs them quite a bit for to get the Bibles. And that's one way we helped. Pastor Doolin, they bought a hospitality house in Vienna to support their mission of carrying Bibles and Christian literature to the foreign countries, the satellite countries. We met him while we were over there in Poland and traveled with him for a week. And they have never had one mishap, one letter. They weren't supposed to be at this one place. The group back here in the States would pray about it, that God would hide it from them. And we know definitely that there was someone there waiting to pick them up when they came. But God had hid the place. They did not find it till the next day, and the guards were not there to take them. They got rid of the Bibles, and so if you really believe, God will bring you through.
John, I'd like to mention, excuse me, but I'd like to mention something. There's a girl came to our church in Seattle, and she told about a very, very interesting situation. It's going to be open, it's a man, about it smuggling into Russia. And it seems that, I guess it was a girl, they decided to take some Bibles when they thought they would try to smuggle them into Russia. And I guess they went from here, I don't know, to Scandinavian countries, and I don't know how, just what their role was. But at any rate, she was praying to God about how she should manage every step of the way, apparently. And they came to, I don't know where it was, to Sweden or Stockholm or some place or other, where they came just before the fight into Russia. And in no trouble, they got the Bible, put the Bible on the plane, of course, and she sat down in the plane, and her fellow sat down right next to her, and they had on a military uniform, and she was wondering, what was the world with all this, And she started getting apprehensive, and they started talking, and it turned out this man, he said he was a colonel in the Russian army. And then kept on going, and finally got to Moscow. And he said, well, you want to get through customs quickly, just pretend that you're my wife.
That's gorgeous.
So he said, okay. So they got to customs, and he said, well, this is my wife. And so they just took the Bibles right into the country.
Damn.
And they got through the country, and then the colonel went his way, and she went the other way, and with her Bibles. And that was it. It was as simple as that. There.
What a story of God's imagination.
Yeah, yeah,
would we ever
yeah.
be able to come up with something like that? Oh,
you used any means to get your ends? That the idea?
As long as the means are justifiable, you bet. You bet. You bet. Well, thank you all for those contributions.
See, Pastor Doolin left going to Russia, too.
That must be something.
And he has never been stopped. He has a camper that he can live in while he's in the satellite countries, and Nobody? Ah. The Bibles are there. If they find them, that's fine. If you don't, but they don't do anything more than just what they're asked to do.
Mm-hmm. Another piece or another aspect of contemporary history is what congregations are doing for handicapped individuals. And let me just mention a few. Some of them probably occur in your church, and then I would like you to share that with the group. One of the ways that churches are using their nursery school space that sometimes, in the past anyway, used to stand idle during the other 6 days of the week, other than Sunday school day, is for day activity centers and daycare centers. Our own experimental preschool for Down syndrome children, for kids 2.5 years until they're 5 years of age, is in a very large church in Minneapolis by the name of Hennepin United Methodist Church. This church is extremely large. It has 7 full-time pastors and a full-time cook, and it's enormous. And one of the advantages in our being there is that the little errors that we make now and then when a child overflows the sink or something like that goes virtually unnoticed. So we blend very well into it. We've been extremely fortunate to have the space. It's first floor space. We've refused to take any basement space because the image of working with handicapped people is frequently of one of serving them in the basement next to the boiler room. I think that's an image that special education suffers from, and so we just refuse to accept anything but first class space. Another thing that's commonly done in churches is to sponsor a Boy Scout troop. And sometimes the Boy Scout troop is for handicapped Boy Scouts. And Boy Scouts of America puts out some extremely good literature for handicapped Scouts, where they don't water down the requirements for merit badges and so forth, but they make the requirements different. And it's very, very, very good material. Sometimes if a church took on a Boy Scout troop for handicapped Scouts, they may not find enough handicapped Scouts in their own congregation because the incidence of mental retardation is something like 1-2% of the whole population. And so sometimes churches get together and sponsor a Boy Scout troop for handicapped Scouts. Another thing that churches are doing much more commonly now is to sponsor Sunday school programs and adult education programs for mentally retarded people. Group homes. Group homes sponsored by Christian organizations, to me, are a good cut above the typical group home that's in it for profit. Even the ones that are in it for minimum profit, I think, are still a cut below the ones who are really Christian. Obviously, handicapped people who are elderly or who are becoming handicapped in a way because of senility are served in rest homes. We have, Barbara and I have some friends who work in a rest home, or at least did, and to hear them tell us that there's a real significant difference between the way Christians die and the way non-Christians die, that's beautiful to hear about. One church that I just heard about when I was up here at the Village this time is sponsoring a Saturday morning recreation program for handicapped people. They've gotten together with other churches in the community and said, handicapped people tend to be lonely, they tend to be isolated, let's have a Saturday morning program for them. And they do. And that's a gorgeous thing to do. One of the activities that churches can do probably most easily and also get the most fun out of it in terms of their parishioners' participation is in the form of a social center. Handicapped people frequently, even if they live in communities that are pretty therapeutic, tend to be isolated socially. We did a survey about 10 years ago when I was working at an institution because we wanted to find out what were handicapped adults doing when they were trained at Northern Colony and put out into a work placement program in the community. Here they had had training at the institution in leisure time activities. Were they participating in leisure time activities in the community? It was a real eye-opener to see what was happening. The number one activity, which excluded almost everything else, was, as you might expect, TV watching. Now, I know a lot of us watch a fair amount of TV, but some of these adults didn't do anything but watch TV. They were completely isolated from the rest of the community. Now, a social center is a very easy thing to start. Usually all it requires is fellowship hall, if you have one in your church, a couple of interested adults who can keep it going, and someone who can go out and sort of dig out the handicapped people in the community and encourage them to come. Most of the handicapped people who come will be those who are post-school age, who are perhaps working in a sheltered workshop or are working in a job someplace, but really have very few friends and very little social contact. The social club for them, the social center, can become the major focus of their existence. And I have participated in one myself and can tell you that they are some of the most joyful places you'll ever visit. Now, with that, I'd like to ask you if you are doing anything in your churches for handicapped people, or if you know churches that are doing some creative things. I expect you are. Mary Ellen, you were nodding your head. Anybody else know of or have a program for handicapped people, one kind or another?
I know the handicapped have come and put on programs. That's the young people from north of Minneapolis on 65 there. I don't remember what it's from this side of
Cambridge State Hospital.
Yeah, Cambridge. They've been there several times.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
And our church also goes up there and puts programs on.
Last year, in Southern California, at Camp Caligula, which is in San Diego Mountains, had a camping program for the retarded. And I don't know whether they repeated it this year. I was away, so I didn't hear about it. I suspect that they did. I know they were asking for counselors to be one of the adults. I think an adult for every child would be up there. Some such relationship. So that may be continuing. And of course, Camp Caligula serves many congregations.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I forgot to mention camping. Camping can be an extremely interesting and productive way to not only serve your own congregation, but to serve handicapped people too. Nancy, I see you sitting back there. Do you want to say anything about your work with swimming programs for handicapped children?
Well, I'm very good with it.
Can you talk a little louder?
One-to-one basis, and yet people that experience in swimming with, whether they're Boy Scouts or even older people, help. Just a one-to-one basis. Retired and double quality kids and all, kids who have any kind of handicap.
What age children did you start the swimming program with?
It was just like grade school. Maybe there were a few younger children.
And were they able to learn in the swimming
yeah.
school?
Were you going to say something?
Well, in a way, in handicap, not these are not necessarily mental defectives, but some of the emotionally disturbed type. But we, through LOM, Opera Ministries in Portland, we worked for a couple of years through some institutional, some other agency. People in the camping program, we mostly are providing site and program, and they are providing staff. And it's a one-to-one kind of a staffing, too. The last group we met was canoeing in a lake on our way to another camping trip, and they had 7 kids and 9 staff, which is a kind of good way to go there.
Yeah.
We've cross-referenced a couple of other institutional ideas, too, in the camping programs, weeks, partial weeks, days, day camping program, picking up many handicapped, though no, not necessarily emotionally or mentally, kids from inner city ghetto areas, day camp, mix and match kind of a thing, kids and grandmothers at the same time, using a camp facility for that program. Cross sleeper with what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm? $5,000 for a week.
Anybody else want to share an idea? I have got one final thing to leave you with if you don't. Go ahead.
This isn't church related, but I did have the experience of working as a music therapist at the Lighthouse for the Blind in Seattle, which is the part I was associated with was a sheltered workshop for multi-handicapped adults. And the prime purpose here was to use music in a social situation where all the members of the workshop were brought together one hour a week participating in music together, and it was really tremendously rewarding to see what could be accomplished in a group of multi-handicapped adults and the pleasure that they got from it and how they looked forward to it every week. This became, in a way, the focal point of their existence during the week.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I noticed on the next to the last issue of the Lutheran, which is the official organ of the Lutheran Church in America, that each issue is going to be placed on a cassette so that people who are blind can hear the magazine, and the cost, I think, is the same as a yearly subscription, which I think is great.
You bet.
And then I get people, losing people who are doing, translating materials into Braille, some organizations, volunteers, I don't know just why they're doing that, but getting materials out in Braille.
And also people who volunteer to read materials onto tape so that they can be put into the blind talking book service. Sure.
American Bible Society is so cool.
And of course, Reader's Digest now coming out in larger print for people and at a rather reasonable price.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things that may come out of that is sometimes kindergarten children, it's fairly common, some kindergarten children have trouble seeing normal size type. And some of these books that are primarily made for the elderly who are having failing eyesight may be an advantage for kindergarten kids too, who are first learning to read. Kind of a nice fallout effect. Well, I'd like to make one final comment and then we'll quit. When I first came up to Holden this time, one of the first talks I gave, I tried to present a convincing argument, or at least statement, that handicapped people are a precious, irreplaceable natural resource, and that when we shut them away in an institution, sort of out of sight, out of mind, that we deny ourselves some of our best humanness. And I can use today, now, in a closing way, to reemphasize that. Junior high students, normal junior high students and high school students, are frequently in a process of getting their own heads on squarely, not only in terms of their spiritual existence, but their everyday existence. One of the best ways that they can get their heads on straight is by interacting with handicapped people, because only the handicapped can provide them with a way of giving themselves to someone who's less fortunate than they are. It can be a way of helping the normal junior high or senior high student find him or herself by giving to somebody less fortunate. I have seen it work remarkable change in normal people. I think it's more beneficial to them than it is to the handicapped people that they're working with. So I'd like to leave you with that comment, and thank you for coming.